This is Nikki from How Novel, and welcome to Free Samples of Local Literature, where regional authors read selections of writing for you to preview. Today, we are going to hear from Brian Newberry.
From Chapter 25 of Pneumatica 2, Sage Against the Machine, titled Dark Blood. CIA agent Jeter continued to pursue the giant fugitive who held the dangling body of Agent Flores over his shoulder. Agent Brown stopped and stooped down to observe the other giant who had collapsed to the ground from gunfire. Brown checked his neck for a pulse. Nothing. There were no signs of life. These creatures were mortal after all. There were 11 9mm holes in the giant's torso. His blood was much darker than normal human blood, almost black. With his gun still in his right hand, Brown used his left hand to examine this unique being. He tried to open the eyelids, but was unable to do so. It was as if the muscles of the eyelids were still functional in pressing the eyes shut. The skin of the giant felt normal by human standards, and so did the dreadlocked hair. Agent Brown observed that each hand held six fingers, the two middle fingers of which were equivalent. Then Brown placed his fingers between the giant's lips and forced his mouth open. Two rows of teeth with large canines were revealed. At this point, Geo and Amos had just crept into the corridor and were looking around. This caught the attention of Agent Brown, who looked up at them. Just then, the giant's eyes opened, and he forced his jaw shut on Agent Brown's fingers, severing the middle three. Brown screamed in agony as he brought his right hand, which held the gun, over to the giant's head. He squeezed the trigger and forced the giant's brains onto the floor of the corridor. This time, the giant was certainly dead. Brown held his bloody left hand into his chest as he hunched over in excruciating pain. Amos stood as still as a statue in shock. But Geo calmly walked over to Brown to examine him. "He bit my freaking fingers off! He bit my fingers off!" yelled Brown. Geo called out to Amos, "Amos, bring me one of the tablecloths, please." Amos remained still and catatonic. "Amos, the tablecloth, please!" yelled Geo. This time, Amos complied and returned with the black tablecloth. Geo took a pocket knife from Agent Brown's belt and tore a piece of the tablecloth to wrap up Brown's bloody hand. Brown instinctively applied pressure in an attempt to stop the bleeding. Geo then told Brown, "Now come, we've got to get out of here. This way." Geo pointed in the direction that the four of them were going before entering the crucifixion room. "What about Jeter?" Agent Brown retorted. "I can't leave him alone." Geo answered, "You're badly wounded and losing blood. You're in no position to fight against these guys, physically or spiritually. Now come with us. We might need you more than Jeter." Agent Brown looked at the empty corridor in which Jeter pursued the giant, and then looked in the other direction. After a few moments of hesitation, he told Geo, "Okay, old man, I'll come with you guys." Meanwhile, Agent Jeter was still in pursuit of the Flores-carrying giant. He fired six shots at the giant's legs, hitting him in the calves and hamstrings, which appeared to have little effect. He fired again, but was out of ammunition. Slowing down slightly, Jeter placed the empty clip into his pocket and reached for another full clip, his last remaining. There was more ammunition in the SUV, but he only had 17 rounds left, perhaps for his own livelihood. Finally, the giant began to limp slightly, but did not slow down much. The corridor made a sharp left, and the giant disappeared from Jeter's sight momentarily. Instinctively, Agent Jeter approached the sharp turn with caution. He stopped and placed his back against the wall, holding his pistol in front of his right shoulder. He peeked his head around the corner of the wall and saw about 20 feet of corridor that was ending in a staircase that led down to a well-lit room. The giant was nowhere in sight. Slowly, Jeter crept down the corridor, remaining close to the wall. Looking down, he could see two trails of blood drops. One was the standard red color. The other looked almost black. He followed the trails that led to the stairs. He walked down into a large oval-shaped room that was highly decorated in ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. There were two rows of stone pews that faced an altar that stood on a platform raised by a few steps. A painted Egyptian ankh with one eye above it was the central artwork behind the table, which stood on the altar. After gazing at the amazing artwork, Jeter then heard footsteps behind him, quickly returning his mind to the present reality. Immediately, his stomach turned sour as the temperature in the room dropped significantly and a foul stench filled up the air. A priest of some sort had entered the room. He stood at almost 8 feet tall and wore a black robe that reached his feet. His head was shaved, and his eyes were dressed in mascara. Then the priest spoke, "Welcome to our holy temple." At that, Jeter raised his firearm and pointed it at the priest. The priest shook his head and said to Jeter, "You won't be needing that in here. It will do you no good." Agent Jeter then felt a strong force, almost like hands, grab his forearms, which made his pistol fall to the floor. Then he watched his 9mm slide across the floor to the feet of the priest, who stood about 20 feet from him. The priest stooped down and picked up the gun and looked at it, half amused. "Who the hell are you people?" asked Jeter, dumbfounded and helpless. "We're not quite from hell, but some might say pretty close to it," the priest answered, laughing. "You have no idea who you're dealing with, do you? Nor do you have any idea of what is going on in the world."
Free Samples of Local Literature is produced by Nikki Pontier Carrolls and KBMF LP Butte. If you enjoyed this free sample, you can find the entire book at How Novel Books and Art.